you do something interesting. Mm-hmm. People on TikTok notice it. The algorithm picks it up and they're just like, huh, I should do that again. And you milk the crap out of it until no one cares anymore.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. There, have you seen the guy who makes videos called No Need for Part 2?
Yes.
I know he popped up on my For You page just the other day and he just surpassed 1.5 million followers like under a week. Millions of accounts blocking him because their content solely revolves around needing that part two to keep their viewership up. For whatever reason, I don't mean to be mean to other creators, but there are a few that I can stand to mess with, and that's hilarious to me.
It's so blatantly anti-algorithm. I love it so much. I just about clapped on the first video I saw of his. I was like, why is it taking us this long to think of this? This is amazing.
Honestly.
Hi, I'm Brad. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Colombia.
I live in Michigan, up in the Pinky Finger.
Calling from Germany.
And wherever you are, welcome to Blonde Radio. Hi, I'm Brad. I live on the west coast of Canada. I just got my first haircut in months, and I wish there were more hours in the day. And welcome to Blonde Radio, where every week I book calls with strangers from around the world. Today, we'll talk to Miguel, a publishing student from South Africa, Natalia, who's making discoveries through music and her identity, and Nathaniel White, TikTok's very own CEO of Handpan. But first, this week at Blonde Radio on Instagram, I gave you a prompt. How do you express your identity? Here's what you had to say.
Hey Brad, Ari here, calling from the Netherlands. I express my identity by really talking about what I love and showing people how passionate I am with certain things in my life, it being photography or fashion or gaming or anime or whatever I really enjoy watching or doing. That's like one of the favorite things I like to express myself through.
Hey, this is Jenna, and I'm calling from Southern Illinois. Music has always been my form of expressing my identity. And this ranges from how I interact with people through music or performing music myself. It's always been my outlet of expression, and I credit it to where I am today. Because as I was growing up, creating music was what fueled my passion to become a music educator and express myself. Without it, I really don't know where or who I would be right now. And it's just really took me on this incredible journey.
Hey, I'm Aiden, calling in from Southern Ontario, Canada. As someone who has struggled with identity in the past, expressing myself hasn't always been easy, so I take baby steps. The simplicity of sharing passions and ideas is something that anyone can do to show others who they are, what they care about, and how they think. It's important to me to share what makes me, me, outside of more artistic pursuits.
Hi, my name is Mario, and I'm calling from Elmont, New York. The way I express my identity is through theater arts. I'm a theater technician, and it brings me joy when people come in to experience the work that I've gone and put up. Whereas, I'm an electrician. I do all this circuiting stuff, and all the lights are all focused and everything. And when people come in and they see the show nicely lit up, it brings me joy.
Thanks to everyone for submitting their responses, and we'll hear more answers throughout today's show. Hello.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
It's crazy hearing your voice, like, speaking to me instead of just speaking, you know, on the podcast.
I get that. Totally understandable. Miguel, thank you for...
Oh, yeah, I'm Miguel.
Yeah, taking time every day to speak with me.
Yeah, it's such a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Of course. I guess off the bat, just sort of give me the elevator pitch on you. Tell me, you know, who you are, what you do, and how you got to where you are today.
I'm an 18-year-old publishing student from South Africa. I love books. Obviously, it kind of comes with the territory. I get overtly excited about mundane things.
What would one of these mundane things be? Give me an example.
Well, right now in 2020, honestly, after such a long like lockdown, quarantine, even just seeing people, you know? Like, I'm so excited just to go out, see some people that I haven't seen in like a long time. Obviously, masks and social distancing and all that stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. I think that's one thing that 2020 has really thrust upon us, you know? We've had to get really comfortable with ourselves, just us, you know?
Absolutely. And then, yeah, the flip side of that is like, because of that, really appreciating these, you know, maybe traditionally smaller events, like seeing your friends.
Exactly. You know, I think we take a lot of that stuff for granted all the time. You know, I think 2020 has been a big year for a lot of people, you know, introspectively, like looking in and finding out things about themselves that they didn't necessarily know or were forced to confront before now.
I love that. You spoke to it a little bit. You know, you've always had this passion for books, but what drew you to publishing? Because like, I feel like traditionally, or at least like the people I knew throughout school and stuff, the book lovers always wanted to be writers.
Well, the thing was, actually, I had no idea that publishing was even a thing until I was looking for courses to apply to. For the longest time, I was set on law. I love debating, and you know, everyone says law's a lot of reading. And then we ended up doing some intro to law stuff in my last year of school, and I hated it. Absolutely hated it. I was scrambling to find something, and I discovered publishing, and it is the perfect thing for me, because I think to a creative career like writing, I feel like it's a lot of pressure, you know, to be creative all the time. I don't know if I'm that creative, but I don't think that's a bad thing. We need people in all different parts of things, you know, and without publishing, the really creative people wouldn't get their voices heard.
That's very true. And yeah. For you, what makes a good story?
I think it's authenticity. You can tell, you know, when someone has poured themselves into a piece of writing. Any story, if it's told authentically, will be unique, no matter what story it is. Because, I mean, obviously, all of us are different and we have our unique points of view on things, you know? And I think that's one of the biggest things for me, at least in writing, is to be authentic.
Absolutely. 100%. And it's something I feel like people will notice if it's there and gravitate towards, which is...
Yeah, I think it goes hand in hand with quality, authenticity.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I think in any creative field, really, not necessarily just writing. I'm sure you've come across it in your field as well.
Very much so. Yeah. I don't think we've spoken to this yet. I usually ask people off the top, but you're calling from South Africa, yeah?
Yes, yeah.
Which is so exciting. How does being from South Africa affect your perspective and your worldview? You know, being from Canada myself, sometimes, and you know, we share a border with America, you know, the spotlight usually isn't on Canada. What do you feel you see most that maybe people who aren't from South Africa don't see?
I think for me, it's just how uneducated people are on South Africa. That's not like fault of their own, you know, kind of thing. I think it has a lot to do with media representation. I mean, I traveled to Germany for a little bit a few years ago, and the one like tiny German kid, you know, he asked if we have schools in South Africa. Oh. And it's of no fault of people's own, you know, but I know that that kid's not the only person who thinks that kind of stuff about South Africa. I think slowly, slowly, South Africa's been brought into the international spotlight kind of thing, you know, where people can look at us and say, hey, we're literally on the same level as most of the countries out there, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a good thing that's happening, you know. We are, you know, just as advanced and in the spotlight as a lot of other countries.
Absolutely.
And I don't think we get represented like that often.
No, that's fair. I think what you're speaking to is true. It's not necessarily like, it's just like a lack of knowledge. It's not, I don't think any ill intentions or ill will, but it just stems from not knowing, which is can almost sometimes be more harmful.
I guess so, you know, ignorance isn't bliss.
Yeah, honestly.
I mean, that's one of the beautiful things of your podcast, for example. You know, you're bringing in all these voices from across the world, which I think is a really admirable thing, you know?
Totally. It is bridging a lot of gaps, you know, especially for me as the host, educating me so much, which is a lovely side effect. I'll take it any day.
Yeah, education any day. It's a great time.
Very good. Publishing and being a publishing student, how set are you in this? Is this sort of a recent revelation? Do you have a sort of concrete image of self?
That's a tough question, okay? Because I think I'm interested in so many different things, and I can potentially see myself in so many different walks of life, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think no matter where I end up, I'm happy with what I'm doing now. And I think that's what's important, is that in the current moment, you're enjoying what you're doing and you're able to apply yourself to it. Because I think it's very hard to apply yourself to something that you don't enjoy doing. As for publishing, like, it's my first year at university studying it. But I'm loving it, hey? Like, I really, really am. It's such a cool industry that you don't think about. It was either doctor, lawyer, accountant, you know, those are the mainstream kind of professions. You don't necessarily hear about smaller career paths. And I think it's just really interesting to be able to find a niche that you love, that you know you can make a career out of it. I'm loving it for now. Whether I'll end up being a publisher forever, who can say, you know? It's definitely, the prospects are looking good for now.
Very good. And I love your sense of confidence and perspective, because it sounds like even though it's working and it's going good for you now, it sounds like you're keeping yourself open regardless, which is very cool.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of people get set into where they want to be at a certain point in their life. And I think if that's something 2020 has taught all of us, is that it's unpredictable, the future, completely unpredictable.
Oh, for sure.
I'm completely open to whatever happens. I think as long as you're happy and enjoying the journey, that's kind of it for me, you know?
That's so perfect. I love that so much. Miguel, I want to thank you for taking time out of your day and speaking with me.
Oh, it was so great, Brad. Thanks so much for having me.
Of course. In closing, I was wondering, what advice would you give to someone who's maybe struggling to find their own space in their own story? Because it takes a lot of work to get to that point. What would you say to them?
When it comes to your own story, just remember that you're the writer. No matter what anyone else tells you, don't let them forget that. When it comes to finding your path, as cliche as it is, you know, do what you love. You know, a lot of people worry about, if I follow this path, am I going to be able to make a living out of it? You know, am I going to be able to have a sustainable career out of it? And I'm a firm believer that if you're doing what you love and you're the best at what you do, which comes from doing what you love, you'll have an income no matter what. I'd much rather live doing what I like than doing something I don't like just to make a living, if that makes sense.
That really does. That's very true. Thank you, Miguel.
Thanks, Brad. It was great.
I wish you a lovely rest of your day. And again, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Yeah, you too, Brad. Thanks for having me.
Of course. I'll talk to you later.
Ciao.
Ciao.
Hey, I'm Knut Kordon from Germany, and the way I express my identity actively is like doing art, making music, acting, but I also do it more passively when I just let myself go and don't give myself any restrictions to my personality, because I think it's the easiest way we can express our identity. Maybe someone won't accept it, but that's their problem.
Hello, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
I'm Brad, it's a pleasure.
I'm Natalia.
Natalia, beautiful. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Colombia.
Colombia, hell yeah. Natalia, tell me about you. Give me the pitch. Who are you? What do you do? And what got you to where you are today?
I'm Natalia. I live in Colombia. I'm from Colombia. I'm studying economics and I have a passion for music since I was little. And I think a lot of events that happen in my life like helped me build the person that I am right now. That's me.
That's awesome. And I love that you brought up music. I was looking through your covers and stuff. I really loved the Coldplay one where you have the backdrop of the city. That was so beautiful. When did you know music is something that you wanted to pursue?
When I was little, I always dreamed about like being famous and all that. When I got older, I realized that it's not about being famous and the money and all that, but the passion that I actually have, like playing guitar and singing. The feeling that I get when I sing, when I play my guitar, is something that I love and I'm passionate about.
And what feeling is that?
I think I feel in peace. Sometimes when I'm having a lot of problems in my life and a lot of, like if I fight with someone, I'll always try to like have my space and play my guitar and relax. I feel in peace. I feel like it's just me. I like to play for other people, but it's like personal for me.
Yeah, that's so special. And for you, what's the balance between, you know, pursuing art versus, you know, what you're in school for? How do you balance the two?
It's hard because when I was deciding what to study, whether to study music or something like economics, it's hard because we all know that music, it's like really hard to pursue as a career. In my country, if you study music, you're probably going to be like working in a call center. Like it's not something that is able to. Here in Colombia, we have singers like Maluma, Shakira, but those aren't like the ones I was looking for to be. So I realized that I could like pursue it in different way. For example, like sharing it in TikTok. I'm not that famous in TikTok at all, but like I can share it with people. In my Instagram, I sing, I play the guitar, and a lot of people like give me background, like it's good, I like it, and that's a good feeling. Like that's enough. I don't want to be famous, I don't want anything else that to share with other people, and if they like it, it's okay, and if they don't, that's okay too.
That's so beautiful. Yeah, that's I think the most genuine art form is doing it as a expression and to share and to provide. That's so cool.
Yes.
And please, I hope this isn't too personal, please tell me if it is, because you know, internationally, it varies so much. Like here in Canada, even though, like, for example, like, let's say gay marriage was legalized 17 years ago, the LGBTQ movement here is still working to progress our collective approach to sexuality and identity.
Yes.
How different or similar is the movement in Colombia?
It's hard, you know, like I when I was like 12, 13, I went to Canada to live for like 1 year.
Because
my family actually lives in Canada. Mm-hmm. In British Columbia.
That's where I'm from. That's awesome.
Yeah, my family lives in Nanaimo.
On the island too. I live in down Victoria. Yeah, Nanaimo's like 2 hours away.
Yes, it is 2 hours away. When I was in Nanaimo, I went to Victoria.
Oh, this is crazy.
In a road trip.
This is so cool. Yes. Okay.
That's crazy because I'm from Colombia. Like you wouldn't imagine that we had a connection like physically in a place, you know?
No way. That's awesome.
Yeah, so I went there, and when I actually went there and lived without my mom because I went to live with my aunt, and I'm here, her husband. In that moment, I realized like, hey, I'm not straight.
Right.
Like finally, I'm realizing because I don't have that pressure on top of me of where's your boyfriend? Do you like a boy? And all that question that you actually have when you're in the school. Mm. So when I was there, I felt like, hey, I'm not straight. In Canada, it was a lot easier. So I think that was one of the things that helped me like come out and all that. And mm-hmm. when I got back in Colombia, I told my mom like 1 year after I came back, and it was really hard. Like she's not that Christian or homophobic like other parents, but it was hard for her because here it's complicated. Even though it's the constitution says that we are not like a religious country, Colombia mm-hmm. is a really Catholic country. So everything goes through that, and like being gay, it isn't that easy. She was worried that I will commit suicide of bullying. Mm. So she didn't allow me to tell people. Like it wasn't because she was embarrassed, but because she was scared. So it was really hard to like be in school and everybody's like, do you like this boy? And not knowing that, like how to explain it without saying that I was gay because like I couldn't. And I used to like a girl, the teachers like found out. And they were going to tell my mom. So I had to tell her first. And I was like, I'm sorry, mom. I just couldn't like hide it because it's really hard. It's just that I really like her. And like, it really shows. When I told her, she like was kind of disappointed. She was really, really, really scared. And the principal of the school, who was also the owner of the school, she was really homophobic and Catholic and all that. And when I was in the last grade in Colombia, it's 11th grade, not 12th grade, but 11th. I wanted to be like class representative. I don't know how it's called in Canada.
Yeah,
but like I went that. And they wouldn't allow me. Like they wanted to find something in my records through the years to like not allow me to be the representative because I was gay. And they couldn't because I was like a straight A student. So they couldn't, and they had to accept it. That was actually good for the school because the kids that voted for me, they knew my sexuality and they were okay with that. And I believe in God. Like, mm-hmm. don't get me wrong. I believe in God and all that. But the way that they talk about gay people was something that I couldn't. And I, in that moment of my life is when I got the anxiety and the depression and I started hating religion and God, actually. I started hating it because the way that they put it in front of me was different from what I was learning all my life. All my life, they told me that God was going to love me no matter what, if I'm black, white, gay, whatever. But when I got in school, like, you can't be gay, you can't be that, you can't do this, you can't do that. I got bullied because I'm not the girl that is using skirts or using blouses. I wear a t-shirt and jeans, and that's it. That's the way I dress. Like, you could say I'm kind of tomboyish. They started to bully me because I was like different. Not even because I like girls, but just the way I was dressed. Mm-hmm. And with my family, that they are Colombians, all of them, it's hard for my grandma. She used to say that if any of the members of the family were gay, she would commit suicide. When I realized I was gay, it was hard thinking about like my grandma saying that, all that stuff. But when I actually came out, like, I never came out like, hey, I'm gay. But they started realizing that I used to bring a girl always. She was always with me. And like, they knew. It wasn't that hard to find out. And it was hard. My grandma had a really tough time. She is diabetic, and she had like the sugar and all that from the stress from knowing that her granddaughter was gay. It was really hard. She went to the hospital and all that. But it's all because even in the news and all that, there's a lot of people that follow like the Catholic bad way of seeing gay people and all the community. So it's hard. For example, here in Bogota, in the last year, we made an advance because Bogota is the capital of Colombia. Mm-hmm. And here in Bogota, last year we voted, and our mayor is a lesbian woman. So that was an advance first, because it was the first time for a woman to be the mayor of city.
That's awesome. And
besides that, she's gay. So it was a big deal. A lot of people were mad. But the young people, like my generation, really, really support gay people and feminism and legal abortion and all that. Even though it's hard, like for older people, when I go out, like for example, with a girl and I hold hands, like I never had bad experiences. Like I have friends that they actually suffer a lot because they told their parents that they are gay, and the parents like beat them out like really, really bad. So depends of the family, depends of the school you are. But in general, you can always like find people that will support you and like love you. I think that when you are gay, you don't have to follow like family is the one with your same blood and all that. I think that when you're gay, you have like that option. Actually, anybody has that option, but especially like when you have the situation that where you get rejected, like you can choose who are your family. You choose your friends or a neighbor or even your teachers, whether you find support in them, like you could, that those could be your family. So I think that thanks to that, I found my family. And after the years that happened, like 6 years ago, my mom accepted it. Like she accepted it like 3 years ago, but now we're like really close friends. She's my best friend. She knows everything I tell her if I like a girl, and it's okay. Like she doesn't care anymore whether people find out or not, because she knows I'm happy, and that's the only thing that matters to her.
That's so special. Yeah, it's all about finding your community and your people that are going to uplift you and support you. And I love Generation Z. Like, they're so with it, and they're so progressive. And I'm really excited about the future because of them.
Yeah, I believe that too. I hope so.
Yeah.
I really hope that. Because the world isn't that beautiful right now. So with all the racism and all that, like, I really hope the new generations change that.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Natalia, I want to thank you again for taking time every day to speak with me. But in closing, I was wondering, this week's prompt was about identity. And I was wondering, what advice would you give to someone who's struggling to find their space to express who they are?
I think one good advice is that you don't have to put pressure on yourself, like to find it right now. What are you and what do you like and all that? I think it's just that through time and through experiences, you get to know yourself more. You can talk to yourself to find out. You don't have to put pressure, and don't let anybody else put pressure on you. It's your decision. It's the moment you're ready to identify yourself. And yeah, that will be my advice.
That's very beautiful. And that's so true. For as many people as I've talked to, like the number one thing is like time and life will answer so many questions if you just like let it happen.
Yes.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Natalia, thank you for sharing your words and your story. I really appreciated what you had to say.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. We'll definitely be in touch. I'll talk to you later.
Okay, perfect. Ciao. Have a great day.
Hey, you too.
Ciao.
Hi, I'm Josh. I'm calling in from Sydney, Australia. And I think the way that I express my identity is by trying to actualize those different ideas in as many different parts of my life as possible. I never used to be very comfortable expressing myself, but I've found that now through making my music, through advocating for mental health, through leading the youth movement, and even running a prayer service for my local community, I find those are some ways that I express my identity. And the one thing that I've really enjoyed lately is going away from those dull clothes in my wardrobe that I used to buy just to fit in with everyone else and starting to buy things that I genuinely think look cool and would want to wear. And I'm really enjoying that.
Hello.
Can you hear me now?
Perfect. I gotcha. Yeah.
I am right now on my way out of the house at the moment. I'm just trying to scramble to grab the last few things. If you can give me just a second, I'll stay on the call. Put on this semi-decent looking outfit for this photo shoot that suddenly popped up.
Oh, this is... Listen, man, we can do this tomorrow if that works better for you.
Hey, man, I feel like something tells me that the spontaneity of doing it while I'm trying to find a pair of matching underpants might be slightly more interesting for your podcast.
I'm siding with you. That you bring up a valid point. Well,
all right.
I'm Brad. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too, Brad. I've seen a bunch of your clips all over TikTok, and I really like some of the stuff that you've been talking about and what you seem to represent.
Thank you.
I've been looking forward to talking to you in person.
Absolutely. Toki Joestar, but also Nathaniel White. Where are you from?
I live in Michigan, specifically up in the Pinky Finger, right on the shore in this little town called Ludington. I have lived there for the past couple of years. My dad is a pastor, a minister of a church in the area, and we moved up here about maybe 5 or 6 years ago. There's a little community college just outside of the town. I was going there for a couple of years. I was homeschooled prior to going into, you know, community college. Mm-hmm. And honestly, the fact that my mom graduated for teaching with very high honors, I guess means that of all the people I know who are in the homeschool community, my mom is probably one of the best teachers that we could have asked for. So that's fantastic.
But that's very cool. That's awesome to hear.
I guess this kind of ties into TikTok. I absolutely couldn't deal with the public school system. I just wasn't made for it. So I spent 4 years trying to maintain focused enough to get anything done. In that time, TikTok became a thing. I just dove headfirst into that, and here I am now.
That's great to hear. I want to know, which came first, the hand pan or making videos?
Oh, that's a good question. When I was a kid, I was working on a bunch of different percussive stuff with a small community band that I was a part of that was run by one of the local pastors in my area who was a band instructor and one of the best in the state. What I ended up doing was, after picking up a bunch of other percussion like snare drum and bass drum and all that, I found this video of this handpan player named Daniel Waples, kind of one of the foundational figureheads to know in the handpan community, especially early 2000s, 2010. And I saw this video of him playing downtown Brighton. This was before I was really introduced to the internet. I just kind of was scrolling through this website called wimp.com, like an early version of a YouTube style video service. At the time, it was fantastic because you could memorize your favorite numbers of videos and just write down those numbers. I had a whole sheet of paper that was like a bunch of random 3-digit numbers that were my favorite videos on wimp.com. But this was one of them. I thought to myself in that moment, damn, I need this. And I've always been a performer. Mm-hmm. Even when I was a very young kid, I would put on magic shows. I didn't know what I was doing then. When I think about it, looking back, I was always making videos of myself. At one point when I was like 7, I took a bunch of Neopet toys that I got from McDonald's and I did a stop motion animation film, Phantom of the Opera style, where they were trying to figure out who murdered one of their own.
Oh, God.
And it took place just on my bunk bed. All of them lined out and I gave them different voices, and you can't really articulate a Neopet. They're just kind of stuffed animals. I watched one of those VHS tapes a while ago. I couldn't understand it or decipher it if I tried, but I could tell that my mind was very full of ideas and a willingness to express them, despite the fact that I didn't know why I was doing it. So I've always been involved, or one way or another, with music performance and video creation. So if you had to ask me which came first, the answer I think would be both. And that perfectly translates into TikTok, where that's at the very tip of your fingers. Yeah, after watching that video, I thought to myself, damn, I need a hand pan. So I looked it up. And at the time, still today, they're incredibly expensive to the point where most people are kind of turned off to the idea of purchasing one. And for me, that was devastating as a kid who, you know, like I said, my dad's a pastor. We don't have that much expendable income where you can just get your child a $2,000 instrument at the drop of a hat. So I worked. I tried my best to even make one myself. Eventually, I met the gentleman who I'm now best friends with. His name's Jeremy Arndt in the handpan community. He was the only guy in Michigan that I knew of who was a performing handpan artist. He traveled all over the world. So I got in touch with him through the handpan forums, and he actually gave me my first handpan, which was a small tank drum, like one of those small happy drums you often see advertised on Instagram. He gave me one of those, and I spent 3 years street performing immediately. As soon as I got it, I went out in public, even though I was in a small town in the middle of Michigan. Thankfully, when I moved to Ludington, it's a bit of a tourist town because of the amount of influx we get in the summertime. We get about three, like our population triples. I was making quite a bit of money. And with that money, after a few years of playing and practicing on that little itty bitty drum, I had enough to buy my first handpan. And since then, with TikTok, I started making videos, comedy, whatever I really wanted to. And when I started making handpan content, I was the first one on this app to really be catering to that content. On other social media platforms, there are thousands of other really talented handpan players who already have a bit of a niche on their algorithm with YouTube, with Instagram, with Facebook, but I never understood any of those things. And at the moment, I am still the single largest handpan account on TikTok. And that's bound to change. I've since seen technically more talented and more technical drummers on TikTok who have far less followers than I do, just because they're new. On an instrumental level, they are far surpassing my current abilities with the drum. Regardless, I have that CEO of handpan in my bio for a reason. And when I see that I need to give it up, I gladly will. But yeah, it kind of makes me proud to know that I am the Daniel Waples to some other kid on TikTok. Someone can look at what I'm doing with my music and with my instruments and with my, you know, uniqueness and talent, and they can think to themselves, I don't just want that. I need that, even if it takes a decade to manifest in my own life, because that's what Daniel Waples was to me. The fact that I get to be that to someone else is pretty astounding.
Damn. Yeah, that's honestly all that it is. It's like the people that inspired me growing up, if I could do that for someone, that's the point. That's so lovely, man.
Thanks.
You know, as we're speaking to, yes, handpan, but also you're doing so much other stuff on the app, from these highly specific ranking the girls of Ocarina of Time. It's just the most outlandish content. Do you ever experience content burnout, or is it something that keeps you energized and keeps you going?
I'll tell you what, right now, burnout isn't something that exists in my... It exists in the vocabulary. It's just a very different type of burnout. I have a very unique relationship with TikTok, and it isn't healthy. And I can tell you that now. With regards to what TikTok is and what it does, it's always been a bit of a drug for me. And I know a lot of other people who feel the same way, where instead of having a single location where you go to see more of individuals you see in the real life, you're like, oh, I wonder what Stacy's doing this weekend. You go to Facebook, you check, and you can see what Stacy did that weekend. Here on TikTok, you get to meet some random username who happens to have about as many followers as you, and you find out that they follow you, and you wonder why. So you follow them back, and then you get in those TikTok DMs, and you start a conversation. After that, you both start to grow together, and then you hop on Discord sometimes, you play some video games, you start chatting each other up. That's something that is far more powerful than the natural reach of TikTok. And this is coming from a musician who wants to profit off of that myself. Like, the natural reach of TikTok is the reason it is what it is. It's the algorithm. What made us grow together in these little pockets of pop culture, back when having 100,000 followers meant something.
Right.
Because there just weren't any people on the app. I know now that, you know, TikTok, since it became TikTok after it switched over from Musical.ly, it was the Wild West. The algorithm wasn't ready for the amount of dissonant voices that would go against some of the staples of what made Musical.ly an app, kind of the glorification of being alternative. you slowly saw the app make that transition back to its core, which was the glorification of self versus trying to grow a community. It was having those outliers of physical perfection, people who have the luck in genetics to happen to be, you know, the children of multimillionaires on top of themselves starting their own clothing brand. And those people rose to the 1% of what TikTok is today, essentially making it what Musical.ly never could have been. Mm. It's like Musical.ly 2.0. For me, that process is addicting. Mm-hmm. And if you want to succeed on TikTok, all I can say is screw hashtags, screw trying to appease the algorithm. Just do what you do best and stick to the one thing you want people to know you for. Right. And only post that. And you will succeed. However, you will not be happy. I won't say that you won't be happy, certainly, because growing the numbers is always a fun game, but over time you will get used to it. A lot of people, a lot of big creators too, also identify with that problem where at first being someone compared to what we traditionally know is like a large following on any other social media platform makes you feel special. But if you're not careful, can change you in a way that is negative. And I feel that somewhat happened to me. And I wouldn't suggest anyone make a career of this app. If you're going to do anything,
right,
do what you do best and show what you do on this app and keep it at that. And drive people to see you elsewhere. Because if all you have is this app, you're in a dangerous place.
100% agree. Yeah. But, you know, as you're speaking to that, that is so interesting. It is connecting to know that there are other creators that feel that same wavelength that you're on.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And that's the thing I was kind of mentioning earlier. Like, people on TikTok are still people.
Yeah.
And that was a shocking revelation for me to realize myself. Like, about 2019, when all these big accounts started following me, I was like, oh, these are just people. And then it got more crazy. When that realization took like another big step forward, I had a phone call with Billie Eilish.
Oh my God.
And it was because of connections that I made on TikTok. And it made me realize, oh, Billie Eilish is just a person. And from there, I've had, you know, phone calls with some of the biggest people in the music industry. Sueco the Child duetted a video about me playing handpan and completely blasted it on the algorithm. I've had a phone call with Claro talking about what made her get into making music. And all of those connections are because of TikTok. Mm-hmm. And it really only takes one post on TikTok or on any other social media platform. All it takes is one post to not just get you noticed, but to motivate you to do something important that will become something bigger than yourself or than the community that chooses to follow you. That's what I'm hoping for still.
Hell yeah. And that's what we love to see. Well, Nathaniel, I do want to thank you for taking time out of your day and speaking with me. But in closing, I was wondering, as a final question, you strike me as someone with a very clear image of self. And obviously that's come through years of making videos, exploring your passions, etc. What advice would you give to someone who's struggling to find a sense of comfort in being themselves?
Ooh, now here's the thing that you and probably a lot of other people on TikTok don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't talk about this on TikTok too much just because it's not a part of me that I want to glorify. I'd rather them know me as, you know, a weirdo who shit posts all the time or someone who plays a handpan instrument or whatever. But I've lived most of my life with 2 or 3 autoimmune diseases that keep me from eating food, that have made my health a living hell, that cause me pain, that make it impossible to have, you know, common social interactions with people. Because there's a lot, like going to restaurants, going to places, and you're just the guy who sits there kind of sipping on a water and enjoying the conversation while, you know, you smell something that you haven't had in 10 years. My sense of self, I'll say, is self-aware. But self-awareness doesn't mean that you know how to fix your problems. Right. And that's my current struggle. It's not just knowing how to point your finger into the crack in the dam and say, this here is the issue. It's knowing how to plug it up. And I'm not entirely sure I myself know how to plug it up. And we're all works in progress. And this is, you know, kind of my battle that I'm trying to wage in myself, to be the one who notices the problem. And instead of allowing my parents or a doctor or someone else to fix it for me, that I'll take the initiative and fix it myself like an adult. After years and years of kind of enabling behaviors because you're scared of your kid's health or you're scared of that, you know, this kid is depressed or mentally unstable, a lot of other people will step in for you and make this comfortable little environment where you don't have to worry. And that's just as damaging as you being on your own, not knowing what to do. My advice for people who are trying to figure out who they are, personally, I feel like prayer is a very important aspect in that. And if you're not the most religious person, I completely understand. But the act of asking and putting those questions out there, whether you're talking to the God who you believe hears you, or just asking yourself and meditating on whether or not you yourself know the answer, putting that out there is kind of the first step. For myself, I find having conversations with people, talking about yourself as if you're someone else, will kind of help you see an outside perspective of who you are and how you're perceived. Because with social media, we often take a backseat approach to allowing ourselves be what we are perceived as. And when we allow that to happen, there's a sense of duality that can form where you become the character you portray without even noticing it. And you lose yourself to that character. So spend a lot of time with others, specifically people who know you well. Spend time with your family if you have them. Mm-hmm. And use their interactions with you as the compass for who you are, because they know you better than you know you. In some ways, if you continue to see how they see, you can remain secure in the knowledge of the picture that you've built for yourself. And you can use that to help direct your path to accomplish the goals that you have. Once you do that, then you will truly be happy. You can truly find that acceptance that you're looking for on TikTok when you're looking for the approval of others. You don't need the approval of others. You just need the approval of yourself. That you can find it. There is hope. Even though I myself am someone who's trying to find it within myself as we speak, right. I know it exists and there is faith in that statement. So have faith, believe, and try your best to get to know you.
That's absolutely beautiful, man. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Thank you again for your time and your words.
Yeah, no problem. If you ever want to talk again or want to talk with some other people, hit me up. Let me know.
That'd be awesome. And best of luck with your photo shoot. I can't wait to see how that turns out.
They're waiting in the... Well, we've been in the car the whole time, but we've just they've just been listening to me talk while I sit in the back seat.
Do so thank them for me.
Yeah, thank you guys for being so patient.
Of course. Well, I'll let you to it then. Thank you again for...
All right, see you later, man. Nice talking to you.
Ciao. Special thanks to Miguel, Natalia, and Nathaniel for making this episode possible, as well as everyone who submitted a response to the prompt. Intro music provided by Wayfie, that's W-A-Y-F-I-E, and accompanying tracks by Lowboil, that's L-O-B-O-I-L, who can both be found on all major streaming platforms. I'll see you soon, and thanks for tuning in to Blonde Radio.